welcome art critics one and all to episode 87 of the Nerdstravaganza podcast. A podcast that never wraps itself in questionable cover art, only to then demand that you ignore that cover art and get to know it on its merits. I'm Tom.
I'm Brian.
And tonight, in case it wasn't apparent from my introduction, we will be discussing bad video game cover art from the classic eras, I guess, of video gaming. But of course, before we begin that discussion, we will start things off in our usual fashion with our weekly geekly weekly roundup. Brian, since you are the only person here who is not me, why don't you go first? What have you been up to, sir?
Not a whole lot this week. I have been spending a lot of time with my beloved miniatures, so that was kind of cool. It was a good deal of my evenings have been spent learning how to make creative bases for them. Beyond that, I've been slogging through, not exactly sci-fi, but The Jungle, the famous book by Upton Sinclair. I found that in a Goodwill for like a dollar and thought I'd give it a read just because I do like catching up on the classics every once in a while. And for me, this is new. I've never been a part of the PSN before, but PlayStation Network released their new free games for the month. And one of my other friends, who's kind of on the frugal side, clued me into this. Even though I don't own a Vita or a PlayStation 3, if you go into like PlayStationNetwork.com or whatever, you can actually see all of the games and purchase them for those systems.
Oh.
So I kind of stocked up on freebies for systems I don't own, just in case I should ever buy them.
Is that a today only thing? I might need to go do that myself.
No. Well, what happens is when you go to the console, it only, like, your console filters it, because your console is a PS4. It's like, oh, I'll show you games for the PS4. But you can actually go in through the website and just view any games. So I've been anxiously awaiting a new free PS4 game, because Resogun and, what was it called? Shadows?
Not sure.
Whatever. That game about contrast. Those were fun. But, you know, they're like a month and a half old, and I was kind of waiting for something new. So I'm anxiously downloaded and didn't play at all the new free game.
It's all about hoarding free things more than enjoying them, I think.
Yeah, yeah. You've seen my collection, so it is definitely about hoarding.
Does that wrap it up?
That wraps my week up.
Cool. I guess I will fill you and our audience in about mine. I have finished my playing of the epic RPG Ni No Kuni on the PlayStation 3. I finally decided after about 90 hours that I had done all the side quests and gotten all the trophies I cared to get with that game. It was a great game. I definitely got my money's worth out of it. I definitely still recommend it to anybody. You could probably beat the game if you just stuck to the main quest in less than half the time I spent on it and still have a great time. So Ni No Kuni, definitely recommend you play that. I am done with it for now. Put that down and then picked up a nice light first-person shooter in the Call of Duty Ghosts game for the Xbox One. I've been just making my way through that campaign. Of course, I put it on the hardest difficulty to frustrate myself with the predictable result that I am frustrated, but making steady progress. I get stuck in a few spots, but then I'm able to power through.
How's the dog?
I do believe you mean Riley. And Riley the dog is awesome and actually the best part of the game, as I'm sure you're not surprised to learn.
Not at all.
Yeah, the dog's cool. He's kind of like a drone. I'm kind of question setting Riley into danger. And then, of course, in certain missions where you're doing stealth stuff, if Riley gets discovered, he dies. Yeah, and then, of course, you restart because you failed the checkpoint. But I'm more concerned with stupid Riley than I am with myself or any of my teammates. I mean, for crying out loud, there's a cutscene where you're riding in your little like personnel carrier and Riley's like popped up through the gun turret, just like looking around like a little member of the team. It's adorable. So apart from that, reading a little more of Exile Kiss, the book by Effinger that I've been working on for a while. And I also went on a really cool field trip to an arcade called Arcade Odyssey down in the Miami area, where I got to play a bunch of arcade games. It's just a full-fledged arcade of the kind you and I probably remember from our youth. Used actual tokens, and I can't give that anything but a solid endorsement if you don't mind the drive from our area, which is somewhat substantial.
Did you keep a token or two for your collection?
I was going to, but then I just was like, nah, I'm going to blow this on like Frogger. I couldn't resist like blowing even my very last token. I did have to take my friend Nick, who is actually one of my former Street Fighter II rivals' younger cousin, to school when it came to some Street Fighter II. But wow, great time. So if you're looking for a classic arcade experience, we will link that in our show notes. The Arcade Odyssey in the greater Miami area. All right, that concludes my update. That concludes your update. So I guess it's topic time. And speaking of video games, and speaking of classic video games, we now turn our attention to the topic of classic video game art, with big air quotes around art, because I know art's subjective, but there are some art that's just objectively bad. And much of that art graces the covers of classic video game boxes, sadly. And there are a few diamonds in the rough as well. But for whatever reason, man, and I don't know why this is, when we were kids, and I think you pointed out that this was especially true in the 8-bit era, so after the Atari era where they really seemed to try with the artwork for games was just lousy. It was like an afterthought. It was like, just slap anything together, the kids will buy it.
I have a theory about this. I think somehow they managed to pin the video game crash on the cost involved in having decent cover art.
Right. We're not spending any extra money than we have to. Right. That's good. That's a great theory. And I think you might be onto something, because in preparing for the show, we were looking at some of the old Atari box art, and it was like movie poster quality stuff, wasn't it? Some of it.
Yeah, some of it was pretty decent.
Yeah. So that said, I would say that we came into our kind of gaming own during what are referred to as the 8-bit, 16-bit, and 32-bit eras of gaming. And so we will concentrate our focus on those eras. So without any further delay, let's jump right in and discuss some good, bad, ugly, however you want to put it, box art from the 8-bit era. And let's start things off on a positive note, Brian. From the 8-bit era, which for me was pretty much the Nintendo Entertainment System, but you, I know, own both a Master System and a Nintendo Entertainment System. What do you recall as having good cover art?
Yeah. I'm trying to think. I guess
nothing is a valid answer.
There are some games that I fondly remember the cover art. Maybe that should count.
There you go.
But earlier, preparing for this, going through, I don't think I would have played these games if I were a kid looking at the cover art today. I mean...
Okay. So you don't have anything you could come out and say is good, really.
Dragon Warrior was awesome.
Refresh
that was a good cover. That had the guy in the blue armor facing off with the dragon snarling back at him. That actually had like a little bit of composition that wasn't drawn by a third grader. That had something to do with the game.
Okay, and so it was evocative of the game. So you'll give it that. Okay, cool. I'm with you, because that's more or less the only thing I took into account when I was coming up with art for the 8-bit era that I considered good. Now, I didn't spend a bunch of time researching trying to find something. I was just going back in my collection when I was a kid. And there were a few, you know, and it all really came down to how well what I played was represented by the box art. I would say the Ninja Gaiden games pretty much had a ninja in like a blue ninja costume. So that got the job done. Mike Tyson's Punch-Out stood out because it had a picture of Mike Tyson punching a guy out. Exactly what you would expect. And one that stood out especially to me, because it was the first NES game I ever owned, was Wizards and Warriors, which had some really cool looking cover art of like a Conan the Barbarian looking guy like doing battle, an evil wizard's visage sort of floating in the background over him. And I remember thinking, wow, I definitely want that as my first game. The cover art was good, but it actually fails when it comes to being evocative of the game, because the hero in that game is fully clad in armor. He's not a barbarian by any stretch of the imagination.
He's not very Conan-ish.
He's in no way Conan-ish. My theory, though, is that they were trying to sucker kids like me into thinking it was somehow related to the awesome arcade hit that was very popular at the time called Rastan, or Rastan, however you pronounce it. And that did sucker me in. It didn't matter. I was pleasantly surprised. Wizards of Warriors was an excellent game with excellent music, and I really enjoyed it. A really great first game to own, I have to say. But yeah, good on the art, failed in its purpose to sort of sucker me into buying the game for what the game was. All right, I think that concludes good from the 8-bit era.
I'm going to throw one more in before we finish. Not because it's actually good, but just because it made me want to play the game. Ghost Lion. I think it was NES game. Ghost Lion had a white lion and a chick in a like typical 80s workout gear with like spandex and leotard. And I have no idea what that game was about, but I always wanted it because of that cover.
Was it about the band White Lion?
I don't think so.
Was it about Kimba, the little anime lion?
No, that hadn't been released in America yet.
Was it about telling lies for other people's benefit?
Lions. It could have been.
So, Ghost Lion. Never played it, but intriguing sounding.
Always wanted to.
Might have to get that one. Well, now as adults, we're not limited by like parental constraints, so we can totally get that game if we want. Moving away, though, from good things into the bad, which is very well represented in the 8-bit era, let's discuss some bad examples of game art from that era. And I will let you go first. Anything stand out as particularly bad?
I almost hate to take this one for myself, but dude, Mega Man? What the fuck?
Mega Man is very well known as being one of the worst instances of box art known to man. It looks like kind of like an umpire from baseball combined with, I don't know, like a turtle or something. What were they thinking?
He does have a gun on his arm. I guess it counts.
And he looks like somebody's like 75-year-old grandpa too in the face, doesn't he?
Yes, he's very old. And I always thought the way he stood was very inhuman.
Kind of that weird, like, crouching but spread eagle stance, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think when they introduced Mega Man, and this is something that I don't think we're going to be able to put our finger on even during this course of this entire conversation, they handed it to an artist to, like, make the kids like it. And, like, for some reason, artists then or marketing companies thought that we wanted, like, kind of, like, realism or something in our art. So they handed Mega Man to an artist, and he's like, I have no idea what to do with this. So he tried his best.
There's a guy in blue armor with a gun on his arm. Okay.
Right, right. And we can get into what the heck the prevailing marketing psychology was during this time period that would cause such atrocities to be created, but I don't think we'll get anywhere because we don't know. And I don't even think the people that did it at the time knew. All right, I'll go next. Double Dragon. Two raging 80s guys, like, muscling off in each other's faces. I guess Double Dragon was about muscly 80s guys getting in each other's faces, but the artwork just looked awful to me. Again, they tried for, like, the more realistic look, and it didn't fit with the game.
As much as I absolutely love the game, the cover art would make me not want to play it. Contra?
Oh, the two, like, again, like the 80s, like, Rambo guys, like, ah, right?
Well, the Schwarzenegger clones in different colors.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty bad. I think, I remember there being a flat top on one of them, but I might be wrong about that. I guess at the time that looked cool. Like, to a kid back then, maybe those guys looked cool. Or maybe you didn't really care because, you know, you played it at your friend's house. Or maybe they were right and kids just didn't care about artwork. But, yeah, Contra was... I would say Contra was actually kind of like Double Dragon. Weren't they doing, like, a face-off on the cover?
I think they were both facing forward. I think they were both, like, grimacing at the consumer.
Well, the consumer was certainly grimacing back if the consumer cared at all about box art. I'm grimacing now just thinking about it. All right, I'll take another one. A game that in the arcade was a favorite of mine, and I couldn't wait for the NES adaptation, which turned out to be very different but no less awesome. That game being Strider. A game about a cool, like, cyber ninja guy with an awesome sword. Very anime-inspired, very cool, very awesome Japanese assets to work with. And instead, they kind of just showed a guy, like, bashing a cowboy in the face with a baseball bat on the cover. I'm not sure why they did that. But poor Strider for the NES got an awful treatment. And I think familiarity with the arcade title would have sold it to me anyway. But, man... unforgivable. Strider was a known property at the time. It's not like it was a guy with a sword hitting a cowboy. I don't even remember if there was a cowboy villain in the Strider NES game. I'm assuming there was, and that's where they came up with that. But
must have been.
Yeah. Tex the villain. Got another one?
Not for 8-bit.
Oh, no problem. No problem. We've got plenty to cover during the 16-bit era, so let's move on. Anything good? You remember from the 16-bit era? I actually have quite a few, and I won't go through them painstakingly, but I'll rattle through them. But you first.
My favorite, and this is almost cheating, because it's not really video game art. They just used the book art for the video game, was Order of the Griffin for the Turbo graphics.
Really? I don't even remember that. It looked great.
It looked amazing. Awesome, awesome cover. Like one of those iconic Forgotten Realms covers.
Okay, I was just going to ask if it was a D&D game, because I don't remember the title Order of the Griffin, but it actually was. So Okay,
it was actually one of the Goldbox games ported, I think.
Ah, okay. So yeah, those were all like done by Larry Elmore or somebody of that pedigree, right?
I believe you are correct, actually.
Right. At the very least, if it wasn't done by Elmore, the person doing it had to hang in, you know, his... strata, so they couldn't go crazy with the art. Cool. Even sight unseen and not knowing it, I'm sure that was good.
You'd probably recognize it. Like, the book wasn't called Order of the Griffin, but if you saw it, you'd be like, oh, I read that book.
Okay. I do remember, like, at least for the Commodore, that, like, Pool of Radiance had a really awesome bit of cover art. So very if it's of similar. That caliber. Okay, cool. All right. I'm feeling it. Nice. Very nice. I've got a couple that I will quickly rattle off. Lufia 1 and 2, that's a couple. Those were shockingly good. I think they just ported the Japanese art over and put Lufia on it, and that was it. Done. And another Super NES title. Those were both for the Super NES, and I'll do one more Super NES title. Final Fantasy 3, or 6 if you prefer, which while... ditching the really great art from the Japanese version, nevertheless, delivered pretty big because it had a Moogle on the cover, and I thought that counted for a lot. Another one, sir?
Wow, Super Metroid made me want to play it.
Super Metroid was very passable and functional art, as I recall. It was Super Metroid, and I do believe it was Samus blasting Ridley, was it not?
Yes, it was, and I hated Ridley, so I wanted to see him blasted.
Yeah, you were meant to hate Ridley. For he was a villain. Yeah, Super Metroid, I'll let that one pass as functional. Now I've got a couple that kind of go together. Those being Lunar, the Silver Star Story for the Sega CD. And I was corrected that it was pronounced Popple, but I do not agree with that. Popful Mail for the Sega CD as well. Both working designs games, both working designs localizations of Japanese games, I should say, after working designs learned their lesson. And I'll get into working designs lesson and their learning of it when we get to the bad.
We're seeing a definite trend here, and being the Japanese RPG fan that I was when I was young, I'm proud of this trend. Chrono Trigger had an awesome cover.
It just had a port of the, what was it, Toriyama art, did it not?
Yes, it did.
Yeah, that was really good. I totally agree with you. Like, that probably was one of the best covers of the generation, because they just brought the original art over without screwing it up. And I think Chrono Trigger is a good way to round out the good of the 16-bit era, because it stands out as probably one of the best, as I mentioned. So with that said, let's get into the so very bad. And I don't even know where to start, but if you will permit me, I will, because I've got... You know what? You go first. I've got a real doozy coming your way, so go ahead.
I'm trying to avoid the obvious. Okay, you know what? I'll go with Sega Genesis MechWarrior. How do you make a mech look boring?
Tone it down. Tone it down. We don't want the kids to be scared. We want them to know this is a safe game to play. Let's just tone it right down. Yeah, don't know, but a valid point. Okay, I'll go next. I think I could probably just throw a blanket statement out there for all TurboGrafx and Turbo CD games. I like to blame the cover art for the failure of that system, because it was just awful. I mean, you could not ask for a more consistently crappy collection of cover art than you could on the TurboGrafx 16 system. Where to start? I'll just rattle off a couple. We were big fans of Valis 2 and Valis 3, both for the TurboGrafx CD, as you recall. And Valis 2 was absolutely awful. It was that nasty, like, pseudo-cartoony, pseudo-realistic art that a lot of TurboGrafx games suffered from. And I didn't think it could get any worse until I saw the cover for Valis 3, in which a very manly, just unbelievably long-limbed Yuko is depicted on the front with, like, brown hair. She looked like a linebacker in armor, didn't she, with long hair?
Yeah, she looked very, very 80s tough guy.
Guy, and I do mean guy. I mean, they took this really cool character from the series and turned her into something not very cool. And just to speak about that weird style that a lot of TurboGrafx games had, Final Zone was another game where they completely butchered that up. They tried to make it cartoony. No, maybe Final Zone went a little too cartoony. Final Zone 2, anyway, for the TurboGrafx CD as well, a complete disaster. Got another one?
Speaking of Turbo games, and I love the game. Again, I don't know how on earth I picked it up and started playing it with this cover. Last Alert?
Oh, that was sort of a Ikari Warriors meets Metal Gear type game, right?
Yeah.
The cover art for that was atrocious. Again, I think the art department at like NEC or whatever the company was that released the Turbo over here, like, was just, they had like a style guy which called for bad, lots of it. Because that was dreadful. The guy depicted on, I still remember the hero's name, Guy Kazama. And he was depicted on the cover as sort
That's
of a hunched...
right.
Guy Kazama was pictured on the cover as sort of a hunched over, like, red-haired freak, right? Like, scowling.
Yeah, scowling.
Oof. Absolutely terrible. I don't know what the direction was there. When I'm ready to round out the 16-bit era, I'm going to come back to the TurboGrafx. But before I do, I've got another awful example from the Sega Genesis, that being none other than Stormlord, which I remember mentioning during our These Two Were Games episode many episodes back. On the front is depicted some Spartan-looking warrior with a sword and a lightning dripping off his arm and all this, and like defying the gods or something. When in reality, what you had was like a hunched over Viking guy that shot blue balls out of his chest and whistled at statues. And my God, what false advertising was on that cover. It almost looked like they were trying to go for a, what was the artist named, Vallejo or whatever? style look, and that was in no way reflected in the Stormlord game. Ugh, Stormlord. Stormlord the game, Stormlord the cover, Stormlord the concept. I still find repugnant to this day. Just not my cup of tea, to be sure. Got another one before I really unleash the big gun from 16-bit?
I'm looking forward to your big gun, because if you can beat Phalanx, I'm impressed.
Phalanx was the space shooter game for the Super NES, and as one would expect from cover art about a side-scrolling space shooter, it features an Uncle Jesse-looking character on a rocking chair with a banjo, correct?
Yep. And somewhere off in the background, there is a starfighter flying by, like 1/32nd of the screen of the box.
Which begs the question, why? Like, who sat down? Like, we need to come up with a cover for this game. Hey, man, I know. Listen to this one. Was that Uncle Jesse guy just looking for work? I have absolutely no idea what the hell they were thinking.
I think they just ordered the wrong clip art.
Like they got it confused with another game, like called Rum Runners or something.
Somebody fat fingered the item number, and then they were like, "Dude, you spent $8. You can't fuck our budget like this. We have to go with this now."
I thought, I thought you said Moonshiner's the game. I didn't mean to say Rum Runners there. Phalanx? Yeah, well, this works too. We'll just put a spaceship up in the corner. That works. I tried to rationalize it when I was a kid because I bought that game because I'd seen like a Nintendo Power or something or some such or EGM or something where Phalanx looked pretty cool and I wanted to play it. Had a ton of slowdown, by the way. It looked cool, but had a ton of slowdown, which kind of ruined it. But I justified it as, well, you see, the guy's like, he's telling the story of the exploits of the fighter pilot and, that's just him, like, you know, looking up into space and remembering. Or maybe he was the pilot. Or I tried so hard to rationalize both my purchase of that game and that choice of cover art. And, of course, I tried to do the, like, you know, you don't get the cover. Like, I tried to actually be, like, an art snob about the cover, which was really stupid.
Good try.
Yeah. Did have to try. So, Phalanx. All right. And you think I can't do you one better, but I can. Not in that I can pick a cover that more adequately, completely misrepresents the actual contents of the game, but because I can find a cover art localization that completely butchers and destroys the original Japanese art. And that is from Working Designs before they learned their lesson. Working Designs learned a lesson at some point. The lesson was, why do crappy local cover art when we can just bring over the Japanese cover art and have our fans adore us for it? And I'm not sure if this was the game that taught them that lesson or if it was another one, but I want to say this one contributed greatly to their learning of that lesson. The game I am talking about is, again, for the TurboGrafx-16 CD-ROM system. The game is Cosmic Fantasy 2. Now, Cosmic Fantasy 2 was, I believe, a very limited release, and you and I were both super psyched about it, and we got it, and it was actually an enjoyable RPG, as I recall.
Balance issues aside.
What, with, like, being overpowering and that sort of thing?
Do you remember the Magic Feather Duster?
I don't? Tell me more about that.
It was some silly little item that you picked up. It was supposed to be like fluff or something like that because it was a feather duster, but it cast like lightning 7 on your enemies. It just like wasted everything you'd fought for like 3/4 of the game.
I wonder if maybe that was something that Working Designs threw in there as part of the localization. They tended to throw their own little spin on things, did they not?
Yeah. It sounds like a cheesy little in-joke that they might have done.
Well, Magic Feather Duster aside, we've got the cover art to concern ourselves with. Now, it's absolutely horrible. I mean, I don't even know where to start talking about this. You've got these cool anime characters reduced to these weird, like, androgynous, like, overly, what is it, airbrushed or textured or I don't know what.
That's a crayon, dude.
I think the only thing they might have gotten right is the spaceship from the game, but everything else, you've got the evil wizard Galem, I think was his name. He's got like this weird like midge face thing with like a little pinched chin and gigantic like eyes. I get that he's kind of like leaning like forward, so you're getting kind of a, what is it, the Batgirl angle shot on his face. But it doesn't matter.
He's doing a MySpace shot.
right. He's doing a selfie. But you've got him, and then you've got like the protagonist in the front. Cadet Babette, I believe, is the wizardess in the front holding a staff. Just really unfortunate, like 80s hair, 10 years after 80s hair was remotely acceptable, wearing some really funky looking clothes to include some unfortunate boots, and in a pose that I can't imagine is good for her spine. Right? have I exaggerated anything so far?
But speaking of pose, this game was at least 25 years ahead of its time because the protagonist's name was Van, right?
I believe so, yes.
Van is doing the legless look at my ass pose.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that because that's, you look across the screen past the horrible adaptation of the magic casting cat.
The cat / squid mutant thing that should die horribly to be put out of its misery.
Yes. You look past that awful creature and you see Van, and he is doing like the twisting of his spine to show you his glossy butt because he's wearing some kind of weird glossy like pants. I guess it's like it looks like some kind of a spandex.
Space pants.
Space spandex, it looks like. And, of course, his sleeves are torn to reveal a much too large arm wielding a much too large sword. And in his shield hand is a much too small shield. And let's not even get into both his and Babette's face.
Which is the same. It is the exact same face.
It really is. What I think happened here, if you look at the way the faces are drawn, this person, this Western like artist, had no idea what was up with anime. Like, capture the essence of the original art. Okay. So he kind of drew that anime style, like heart-shaped face, and then just like tried to fit more realistic and realistically proportioned features, like tried to glue those onto the faces. And oh my. By the way, did Van like even remotely resemble this guy?
No, Van was like some backwoods yokel from this uneducated planet, wasn't he?
Something like that, yeah. And Babette was like this sophisticated like spacefarer. Right, so Cosmic Fantasy 2. Now, Working Designs went on to become one of my absolute favorite companies because they localized so many great games. I mentioned Lunar. I mentioned Popful Mail. That was for the Sega CD. They did a couple of games for the Turbo. They went on during the PlayStation era to localize a whole bunch of games. And later, they learned another lesson, which was a bad one, which is that they were funny. And a lot of bad comedy started to get inserted in their games, and they really started to lose me then. But I will give them credit. As much as they started to lose me with their game content and their sort of additions to games, they were consistently good about really high quality, like, foil treated?
The gold foil, yeah.
They just did a fantastic job. They took the art assets that were already there, that were already perfect, and brought them over with very like tender, loving care. Like, they really gave a crap. I think Cosmic Fantasy was their low point in terms of game cover art, and from this point on, things only got better. So Cosmic Fantasy 2, probably among my least favorite instances of cover art from the 16-bit era, and I'm ready to close the 16-bit era out unless you've got something else.
Nope.
All right. So now, moving forward in time to the 32-bit era, which is, I think, the last... This is when we stopped counting bits. This is when how many bits this have, how many bits this bring, ceased to be a consideration in system purchases, right?
Yeah, pretty much. We finally had enough bits.
Yeah, there are more bits than you'll ever need, because I believe the... It really also didn't make sense, because this was the era wherein the ostensibly similar bitted systems, the Sega Saturn and the PlayStation, were really different in terms of their strong suits. And the 64-bit Nintendo 64, which, since it had double the bits, should have been twice as good, turned out to be about half as good, in my opinion. And we'll skip right past all the intermediate systems like the Jaguar, which was 64-bit, based on some kind of twisted math. We'll also skip past the atrocious cover art for those Jaguar games and focus on, for me, mainly the PlayStation. That's where most of my attention was during this time, and that is where most of my cover art examples come from. But I don't want to jump the gun and jump right in. Brian, anything that comes to mind from this era for you, good cover art-wise?
This was such a silly game, and it was one of those later releases that didn't get a wide audience. And it was so fun and so quirky, and the cover was really good. No one can stop Mr. Domino.
Mr. Domino? I don't know what you're talking about.
Google it. It's just one of those weird games that they slapped together for like $9.99 or whatever. And it was about a domino running through a yard collecting items. And I think the cover very well conveys that.
I'm looking at it now. Indeed it does. He is in fact a domino running around doing his thing.
And look how much fun he's having doing it. Don't you want to have that much fun too? Don't you want to play his game?
I really do. He is kind of drawing me into his world. Hi, Mr. Domino. You look cool. Nice. I never would have expected that one, I have to be honest with you. All right. I will do an example of good art. It's Final Fantasy VII. Not because I particularly loved the art, but because I was so relieved when they didn't do some like crazy attempt at photorealism or an attempt to change those very anime-inspired characters, I guess, into like He-Man-inspired characters for the American audience. It was just Cloud's like back, and I believe he was just looking at Midgar, right?
Yep.
And it was just such a relief. Like, oh gosh, we finally turned a corner. We're going to stop just completely butchering cover art after so much suffering. Got another one from this era?
No, not a good one.
Well, I do. I will jump over to the Sega Saturn. I said I was going to focus on PlayStation, but I actually did have a lot of really cool Saturn games. And thank you again, Working Designs. I'll just rattle off a couple. Your cover art for Dragon Force and Albert Odyssey? Amazing. No complaints. They looked great. By the way, if you have a Saturn or plan on getting one, I recommend that you play Albert Odyssey and Dragon Force. Albert Odyssey's only problem is it suffers from some kind of long load times for the battles. Working Designs, to their credit, cut those down to like a third of what they were in the Japanese version. I liked the game so much. It looked so good. It was so enjoyable. I didn't even mind them. And the animation in the battle scenes was beautiful. But I know we're talking about cover art, and I'm just going to say again, Albert Odyssey and Dragon Force, amazing cover art. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Working Designs. Also, Panzer Dragoon Saga didn't look too bad. I'll just throw that in there, too. That's it for good, huh? That's it for standout good from the 32-bit era?
I'm afraid so.
You don't want to throw in, like, some Crash Bandicoot or some, which didn't really look that good. Anything along those lines? All right. Okay. No Knights?
Symphony of the Night. I would give it that.
Oh, Symphony. So I mentioned Knights from the Saturn. You jumped to Symphony of the Night, the Castlevania game. Okay, cool. I will give it that, too. That's very good. And I want to point out before we move on to the bad, this was the era when we started the transition from mostly awful to mostly pretty good game art, so that we eventually arrived at where we are now, where I don't look at game art today and want to retch. You know, they actually take it into consideration. Some thought is put into it. That said, let's get into the more rocky parts of this era. Let's talk about some crummy 32-bit game art. Brian, roll.
I hate to pick on this game again, but Blood Omen was very generic.
What was on the cover of that?
It was like a pile of gold and a sword stuck through it, wasn't it?
Blood Omen, The Legacy of Kain, yes?
Yes.
And it was dreadful. I'm sorry to hear that. Blood Omen was the game we also mentioned in our These Two Were Games, if I recall, where the guy repeated the Vae Victus, Vae Victus, Vae Victus every time you used his special attack.
Yeah, it was... Apparently, everyone else thinks it was a great game. I know it, you know, did very well, but the cover was a pile of bones and a sword sticking out of it in, like, three quarters of the cover was just font.
Yeah.
Not exciting.
Well, I think I'd almost rather a font-heavy piece of cover art than what I'm going to bring up next, which was one of the, I believe, launch titles or pretty near to launch. That being Battle Arena Toshinden. A game that, for its time, looked great, had some passable, like, computer-generated art that would have served just as well on the cover. And when I say just as well, I should say better than the awful hand-drawn atrocity that is, like, a big square-jawed, like, I don't even remember the hero's name, Ryu or whatever his name was, like, rah, taking a swing at one of his opponents. I guess our expectations were still stuck in the 16-bit era so they could get away with it. But now you launch a system with games with cover art like this, man, you're shooting yourself in the foot. Take a look at it, Brian. Let me know if you agree with me.
Let me look that one up. Oh yeah. Yeah, that's bad.
I told you, man. And if you happen to do a Google search and it has any other suggestions, I wouldn't recommend looking at Battle Arena Toshinden 2 or 3, because like the games, the cover art actually managed to get worse as time went on.
There's some interesting images of Sophia that popped up looking for yikes.
Sophia was the blonde, right? With the, would she have a whip or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not surprised to learn that there's more than a few interesting images based on her. Sadly, there was probably stock art of her that could have been used alone to greater effect than the crummy, whatever that was, that they threw on the cover of Battle Arena Toshinden. Just awful. Unforgivably awful. Shoot, man. What's up next?
Oh, God. It's toss-up because I really liked both of these games, and they're nearly identical, but I don't know which is worse, Kingsfield or Kingsfield 2.
Oh, my goodness. Well, let's start with the fact that both games were, like, running at one-tenth of their intended frame rate throughout the gameplay, and it didn't take away from the game, which says something.
Yeah, that was...
I loved those games, but I know we're talking about the cover art. What did you find objectionable about the cover art?
Okay, so Kingsfield was all about this lone adventurer delving into dangerous dungeons and fighting traps and using magic and, you know, orcs and hydras, and the cover art was two swords crossed on a field of, like, red tomato juice.
Right. The
two
Kingsfield.
Swords. That's, I mean, two swords.
The Kingsfield. The Kingsfield is one soaked in blood, for a king must secure his crown through the shedding of blood. That's what they were going for with that.
Sure.
Hard to argue with you on that. But I think I can do you one better. I think I can do you one better because I can step forward a couple years into the advanced life of the PlayStation, where they should have known better, and they were starting to know better, but that nevertheless did not prevent the atrocious cover art of the localization of the excellent Japanese game, the pronunciation of which I will never get right, to everyone's satisfaction, that being Suikoden, or Suikoden, or however you're supposed to pronounce it, that awesome game where you basically gather an army to overthrow evil, went from having this really awesome cover art, which, if I recall, was actually featured inside the game pack. You had that on the inside, and then on the outside, you had something that I have no idea what they were going for. The Emperor's like this weird Fu Manchu guy. There's this weird, like, three-headed dragon, which was in the game as the final boss, I recall. I think the Emperor turns into that. But what the hell were they thinking, man? It's just... If you do a look side by side of the original Japanese cover art and whatever that crap was on the front, I remember my buddy and I, when we both got the game, were laughing for hours about how awful it was. We were just completely, like, nitpicking it, like, picking it apart. Some, like, weird sorceress on the front. Like, they were these characters, you know, we don't want this silly cartooniness on the cover. Make it look like movie poster realistic. And somebody tried their best, and their best was pretty bad. What's your theory behind that? Brian, in your mind, explain the conversation that went on in marketing.
I can kind of see this being like almost like a racial thing. Like, guys, this isn't a Japanese game. You can't have a Japanese cover art. You need like Chinese cover art. But wait, what do the Chinese cover art look like? I don't know. Just not Chinese, not Japanese. okay. Well, short black hair on everybody.
Sure. Yeah. That works. Yeah. Anything. Just get it out the door. By the way, you've got like a week because we're releasing the game, so you know, probably get on that right now. Yeah, you know, I think that there was probably this perception. So, unlike during the Atari era when a lot of the games were made here in the U.S., during the 16 and 32-bit eras, we're talking a lot of imports, a lot of stuff coming over. And I guess maybe marketing people are conservative or the owners of game companies were conservative. They didn't know that this new cartoony style that Americans weren't used to would sell. Because, you know, the Japanese are from another planet, and therefore what they like can't possibly apply to, like, everyone else or something. Strange. Strange days. Strange time to have been a video game consumer if you want any kind of satisfaction out of box art. I will say that.
I believe I did actually just, like, swap the box art on this one because that's really horrible. And they included it. I mean, they gave it to you. Just wait, it was in it.
Could you switch them around? Was there a way to flip them around?
I think so. Wasn't this just printed on the back of the jewel case?
I don't remember. I think it was on one of the inside covers of the jewel case. But that would have been great if they gave you the ability to just swap it out for the crummy art. What were they thinking? No, I think for part two, they were like, whoa, what were we thinking? And it looked okay. And from that point on, it looked fine. Although I will say, and this is another thing I want to mention before we leave this era, and I guess this is the last era we're going to discuss, because from here on out, as we said, it got better. This was also the era when CG was really coming to the fore, and you started to get game covers that were just like screen caps of like the creatures or the heroes or what have you from the game. So it was either, I say CG, but I mean CG or 3D, you know, polygonal games. For a while, they thought those would suffice as cover art. And in my opinion, they never did. I didn't, like a plasticky CG-looking character sitting on the cover never really did it for me. Any more than like badly drawn, hand-drawn art. And it wouldn't take much but a cursory search for like PlayStation or Saturn cover art to see exactly what I'm talking about. So I think we both agree it's going to be hard to top Suikoden or Suikoden in terms of bad 32-bit cover art. So let's wrap things up with the worst 16-bit era fighting game art we can think of, because for some reason in our discussions we've zeroed in on like fighting games, beat 'em ups from the 16-bit era having like the absolute worst art, like consistently bad, and I don't know why. I don't know if you had to really sell a fighting game or what, but they were just awful. So here we go. I will start off with, for the Sega Genesis, Streets of Rage. Top that.
Bad Dudes.
Oh. Hard to argue. Bad Dudes is terrible. Final Fight with Hagar about to like make out with a Mohawk guy.
Adrenaline's a dangerous drug. Fatal Fury.
Oh, God. Fatal Fury with like the Brooklyn Brawler from wrestling, like punching a guy. That was pretty awful. But you've gone and gone like a one-on-one fighter. I was doing like side-scrolling beat-em-ups. I don't know if I could let you have that one.
All right. My personal favorite, Rival Turf.
Rival. Oh my God, with the teenage, like the teenage toughs on the cover? The
teenage hoods?
Oh yeah, you
don't
win.
Don't play this game. It's dangerous. It's bad news.
These are the kids that wouldn't let you concentrate in study hall. Those kids didn't look tough at all. What were they thinking? Like, the owner of the company was like, hey, invite your friend Cody over, and we'll dress you up as tough guys. You can be on the cover of this cool game we're making.
Okay. Bring your daughter to work day.
Rival Turf wins for the most non-threatening suburban teens on the cover of a fighting game ever in history. So I give that one to you. You win. Rival Turf.
I grew up on the street. Main Street.
I had to stand in line for my fountain drink at 7-Eleven. It was rough. Awesome, man. Well, I think that was a great way to round this episode out. And I want to invite any of our listeners to stomp onto our turf if they want and dare suggest that any podcast rivals ours. Once they've determined that no podcast can come close to rivaling ours, we encourage them to rate us favorably on iTunes, subscribe to us, write us a review, etc. And as well, check us out on Stitcher, or in addition to, or instead of, if you prefer streaming to the iTunes solution.
Don't forget to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, plus one us on Google Plus, which you're gonna have to sooner or later, it looks like. And if you really want to get that little insider info, join our super secret group on Facebook. Our private group.
That's right. NerdStravaganza.com as well, and email us at NerdStravaganza@gmail.com, or we will send the rival school kids to tickle you to death. And with that,
Michael!